The last topic of the first part of the numerical modules deals with iterative methods for non-linear systems of equations. This problem is important. For instance, you know that the stationary condition for a point to be a minimum or a maximum or a function which has to be optimized is a condition of this type, which in general is not linear, system of equations. Well, let us introduce some notation details. We will write the problem in this form, where f is defined from R to the n into R to the n. So it's in the vector, but also f is a vector. I am introducing some notation details in order to speak about iterative methods for nonlinear systems. We start from the system written in this way, where x is a vector of R to the n, and f is a vector of functions defined over R to the n. In the following, in a similar way as in the case, as in the scalar case, we will transform this problem in the form and this form. The reason that you imagine is that this form, the second form, form 1, form 2, suggests in a natural way an iterative scheme defined by the function g. Also, g is a vector of functions, so we will have g sub 1, g sub n. We will need also the first partial derivatives both of the functions in f and the functions in g. How many partial derivatives? N to the square for f, but also n to the square for g. So we consider the well-known methods called Jacobian, both for f and for g, and following the notation in the didactic material, we will call metrics of function, the Jacobian metrics J of x, whose entry of indices R and S is defined as the partial derivative of F sub R with respect to the variable x sub s, and analogously we introduce the Jacobian matrix H the entry of indices R and S will be the partial derivative of G sub R with respect to the same variable. The two Jacobian matrices. A few words about the usual way in which one can transform this system into this other system. Also in this case, the technique is similar to an analogous technique used in the scalar case. In the scalar case, one starts from fx equal to 0. Now x is a scalar, f is a scalar function. Changes the sign, multiplies by a suitable function, let us call m x. For this, under the condition that m of x has no zeros in the region of interest, and finally one can add x to both the sides of the equation. So if I call g of x the first side of the equation, I found a scalar equation, I am in the scalar case, of form x equal to g of x. That is the desired form of the equation. Can I do something like this in the vectorial kind of case, in the vector case, which is the case of interest? With the same notation, or rebalancing notation, we start from the form 1, fx equal to 0, we change sign. Here, instead of considering scalar function, we consider a matrix of functions. So let us call this object with the capital letter. And the condition, this condition is replaced with an invertibility, a non-singularity condition, that determinant of m of x not zero, cannot be zero in the in some subset containing the solutions of the problem. The last step is formally the same. So we have defined a function g which has the form x minus some suitable matrix M of x multiplied by the original vector of functions f of x. To conclude this remark, we will see better next time, Friday, that the most interesting, for several reasons, choice of M of x is the inverse of the Jacobian matrix of F. And this choice leads to the well-known vector version of Newton methods, which is called also Newton-Raphson method. Newton-Raphson method starts from this choice for g of x, x minus the inverse of the Jacobian matrix of F multiplied by x. It's the vector version of the Newton, the scalar Newton or tangent method that you all know well. Let us turn to the general case with some theoretical preliminaries about the convergence, which is the most delicate problem involved in these methods, we get two convergence results referring to the problem in the form 2, the second form. So we start from to the problem already transformed in the form which suggests the iterative scheme. Always in terms of notations, we will call alpha the solution or a solution of this problem. So alpha will be equal to g of alpha, the theorem, the main theorem. The assumptions. Alpha is a solution. We have already said this. If there exists a set S coincidence. S is a subset of R to the N of vectors whose difference in norm, which norm? The infinite norm. The difference from x between x and alpha in infinite norm is less than some positive constant sigma, less or equal. So it is a neighborhood of alpha with respect to the norm, to the infinite norm. For instance, in the plane. If this point represents alpha, S is a square having side 2 pi c. We require that in this set S, the infinite norm of the matrix G, H, the Jacobian of G, is strictly smaller than 1 for x in S. Another assumption that is necessary for the proof we will see is that G must be of class C to the one in S, that is continuous partial derivatives of G in this subset. So the matrix Jacobian, the Jacobian matrix H, is made of continuous functions which are the partial derivatives of G. If we resume the assumption, we get first assumption, G must have this property in S. Two, the infinite norm of H less or smaller than 1 in S. Three, the starting point has to be chosen in S. You recognize a similar assumption. Similar assumption says the convergence assumption in the fixed point theorem for scalar methods. This is some kind of fixed point theorem in R to the N. The proof is by induction and follows the same idea of the corresponding proof for the scalar case. Which is this idea? The idea is to prove that the norm, the infinite norm in this case, of a difference x super we use the index I and not I plus 1 minus alpha infinite norm smaller or equal to 2 a constant we will define here, we will call it lambda, raised to the nth power by the radius of the neighborhood S we have introduced in the assumptions. Lambda is defined as the maximum of the infinite norm of H in S, which by condition 2 must be strictly smaller, less than 1. This inequality is proved by induction. So it is obvious that for I equal to 0, we have starting point minus alpha lambda to the 0 by sigma, but this is true. This is true as a consequence of the condition 3. X to supper 0 is chosen in S, so its distance, an infinite norm from alpha, must be less or equal to sigma. 2 for condition 3. The generic step of induction. What says? I have to consider this difference but this difference can be rewritten as the iterative scheme G in X super I minus 1 minus alpha is a solution both of the system in the first form and the system obviously in the second form. So alpha is equal to G in alpha. Well, here we can use the vector form of Lagrange formula, or that is the same thing, the Taylor's formula in R to the n, using what? The gradient, or that is the same thing, the partial derivatives of all the functions which form the vector g. So it is better to consider the element in position R of this equality. This is a vector equation. Let us consider in both sides this element in order to use the Taylor's formula. I mean X sub I sub R and so on. Formula. Or Lagrange theorem, we can write this difference as the scalar product between the gradient of G sub R computed in some point C sub R scalar product by the difference x sub I minus 1 minus alpha. Let us expand this And we find the sum of use the index s from 1 up to n, partial derivative of g sub r with respect to x sub s computed in x sub r, multiplied by the corresponding elements, the difference between the corresponding elements of x and alpha. Let us turn to absolute values. Yeah. Anyway. Triangular inequality for the absolute volume values. I don't write again, these are the partial derivatives, and here are the differences. I can put outside the maximum of these differences, the maximum of the absolute values of these differences, with respect to S. This is the infinite norm of the difference between the same vectors, x and alpha. So the next inequality will be, I can rub out all this, will be I have said the norm outside the infinite norm, the sum, the addenda in the sum are simply all the values of the partial derivatives I am writing now. These values are exactly all the values which appear on the row of index R in the Jacobian matrix H. The row of index R of H computed in this point. If you remember the properties of the infinite norm of matrices, which property in particular? The infinite norm of a matrix, of this matrix, has the value maximum sum of the absolute values of, I write simply, H sub ij, the same point. The sum is made along rows, so if we have here j and here I. We remember this fact. So this is one of these sums. The infinite norm is the maximum, it is natural to enlarge this quantity, to bound this quantity with the same norm I had before, multiplied by the infinite norm all norms are infinite norm. The last simple substitution we use the definition by the definition of lambda. I can bound this by lambda, so I have that for all the values of R, I have that the absolute value of that element of difference is less or equal than this. I consider now the maximum of those values, so I have the infinite norm of the vector, the difference vector, the maximum of this, and it has just been bounded by lambda by the infinite norm of the preceding difference. The error vector at step I is less or equal than lambda by the error vector in norm, naturally, of the step before. By induction, we find the thesis, which was, I write the thesis again, the error at the starting point, which is less or equal than sigma. Error vector at the step I minus 1 lambda to the I use this inequality for every, for each step, until I reach the starting point. At the starting point, error vector was less than sigma as a consequence of the third assumption. This result implies convergence if we use the limit because the limit must be zero, and this means convergence with respect to the infinite norm, but all norms are equivalent, so we have convergence with respect to any norm. An example, the same example you can find here
that is a linear system, non-linear system of two equations in two unknowns. Example, the two equations are in the plane the system is in the form 2 x equal to g of x. The two equations are x sub 1 equal to g sub 1 of x, which is defined, is given as So if we give a geometric meaning to the vector which satisfies this equation, we will find circle. Second equation is a sinusoid translated x2 equal to the sine of x sub 1 plus 1. We sketch.
It's better to use the other board. What we want to do, we study
the existence of solutions. We consider one particular solution and we will try to check the conditions of the theorem we have already shown. The first equation is can be rewritten more simply as minus this form. You recognize the equation of the circle, or the circle of center to 0 and radius since it contains the origin. And the second is the well-known form of a sine, and to draw the graphic of the second function, we observe that the sine annihilates in x1 minus 1, so it is bounded by plus and minus 1. So here the behavior is like this. We observe also that the first function, it is a function, so its graphic cannot be
a circle.
The values of x sub 1 for the first function are positive. So we
recall this obvious condition from the first function. We find only
one solution, alpha,
all elements alpha sub 1, alpha sub 2. The conditions of the theorem. The Jacobian H of X is involved. We compute the Jacobian. The first row is formed by the partial derivatives of G sub 1, which are
1 over 2 by X1 and 1 over 2 X sub 2.
The second row contains the partial derivatives of G sub 1, which are cos of the same argument and 0 for the other derivative. The infinite norm of this matrix is the maximum between the infinite norm is the maximum between the sum of the absolute values over the first row and the same sum over the second row, which is only cos in absolute value. In order to satisfy this condition, well, in an hypothetical subset S that we have not yet chosen. We can consider a subset of the plane where this term is less. Strictly less than 1, that is the set of points which satisfy this inequality, strict inequality, which is a rhombus. This is minus 1. Put in this way, which contains alpha, obviously. Okay. I want also that the cosine is in absolute value strictly less than 1. Where in this rhombus the cosine of x1 plus 1 is equal to 1. over this segment. So at this point I realize that the open rhombus without this segment is a set in which that maximum is less than 1. The subset S of the theorem can be chosen as a square entirely contained in the set that I have just described. So I could choose as x0, simplest choice, which would be 0, 1, is this point. Are all assumptions satisfied? Yes. For this set, this choice, lambda, certainly, lambda, which is the maximum, of the infinite norm of H of the Jacobian, will be less than 1. Because why? Because it is 1, has value 1, only on the frontier of the rhombus, and along this segment. So we have convergence, thanks to the previous theorem. You can find here some iterations. The method is not very fast. This is the rate of convergence is the main reason for which the most used method for this kind of problems is the Newton methods. We will see that the Newton methods has a quadratic rate of convergence, so it's very fast. We will continue in the 2 hours of next Friday lesson. Okay? Thank you.